On the flight deck, listeners are manning up for the podcast launch. It's time for all unnecessary shows to clear the airwaves.
You're listening to The Hangar Bay, a podcast dedicated to the latest military flight simulation and hardware news. From developers to the community and everything in between, The Hangar Bay will get you squared away.
Welcome down to The Hangar Bay, your source for the latest news that every military flight simulation pilot can use for the week of February 10th, 2024. I'm your host, Stumanji, and I'm happy you could join us for another episode of The Hangar Bay. Hopefully you've had a great week of flight simulation. It's been relatively quiet for me, but I'm hoping to join up for some multiplayer flights in DCS tonight. Get the weekend started off right. But as far as the show's concerned, let's get things started off like we do every week with the flyby. The flyby is where we aim to cover the highlights from this week's news in 60 seconds or less. Kicking things off this week, we have Enigma from Enigma's Cold War server who interviewed the developer of the Simlight game Nuclear Option. The DCS Lunar Sale is live with most modules, maps, and campaigns on sale. The OH-58D Kiowa for DCS is undergoing release testing, so hopefully we'll see that go live soon. On the IL-2 front, the Spitfire IXC will be free to owners of the Battle of Normandy when it's released with the next patch. More fallout from Honeycomb. These guys just can't catch any breaks, and it sounds like the company might be under new management. Verpal, on the hardware front, Verpal's running a sale, a 10% off sale when you purchase two control products together. That'll last through the 16th of February. And then finally, again, on the DCS front, there's a mod that adds the Essex-class Bonhomme-Richard aircraft carrier to the game. So that concludes the flyby, so let's dig into the news in more detail, kicking things off with the developers.
Hey everyone, Wags here.
So as we mentioned at the start of the flyby, the big piece of developer news this week was the Enigma interview with the Nuclear Option developer, B-25 Mitch. For those of you who haven't checked out Nuclear Option, it's self-described as an action flight sim with nukes, which I love that brief synopsis of the game. It's more of a sim-like game, reminiscent of some of the flight sims you might have tried in the 90s. You know, the idea behind it is you can jump in and get pretty good at the game in a couple of hours, get your flight sim fix without having to go to the study level of games such as BMS or DCS. It's only $15 on Steam, so if you haven't checked it out, I highly encourage you to go over there and read up a little bit more about it. But the interview itself is really comprehensive and interesting. It starts with, overall, it's an hour in length, and it covers not only the background of the developer, also their future plans for Nuclear Option, but it touches on some interesting elements of the Simlight community. You know, what they can bring to the flight sim community without necessarily going into the depth of things you see, such as DCS and BMS. Topics they covered include additional gameplay functionality and features that maybe things of DCS struggle with, such as electronic warfare, and also how you can merge the concepts of not requiring a lot of time and effort on the user to come to grips with the game while also having a fun experience, especially in a multiplayer environment. So support Enigma. Go check out what he did with the YouTube interview. I've got it linked in the blog notes, which you can always find on thehangarbaypod.com, and learn a little bit more about the game itself. Some future plans they did talk about for those of you who've tried the game and are interested in it, as I mentioned, are the aforementioned electronic warfare element. It sounds like the next plane will be entirely focused on this aspect of the game. And it's a really cool feature. It's an element of flight sims I wish more developers would attempt. You know, that concept of don't let perfection be the enemy of the good. I understand you want to make things as historically accurate as possible, and there's a lot of people that really want those elements of their flight sim, but I'm glad that this niche is already also being served by developers such as B-25 Mitch. All right, so that concludes things on the Nuclear Option side. As I mentioned, go check it out on Steam. Kicking things over to the DCS side of the house, as I mentioned in the upfront on the flyby, the Lunar Sale just commenced, so that's now live. That started on the eShop, so the official DCS store, on the 7th of February, and the Steam portion of the sale should have gone live yesterday and should now be active. The Steam sale will run until the 16th of February, whereas the official eShop will run until the 18th of February. So if there's any campaigns, modules, maps you're missing out on, now's a good time to go over and check it out and see if you want to add something to your hangar. I was a little disappointed to see Heatbor and Razbam are sitting this one out, which I feel like they've been doing for a while now, particularly on the Razbam front. The South Atlantic map, as I mentioned on a previous episode, is the only map I don't own, and I was really hoping to pick that up in this sale, but at the price tag it's currently being offered at, I just don't know if that's a compelling purchase for me. That said, I'm also looking at the Mi-24 Hind to round out my helicopter collection and potentially the F-1 Mirage. On the campaign front, I've been keeping an eye on Ground Pounder's Wild Weasels Over Syria campaign for the F-16. That's 25% off this week. But what about you? Are there any campaigns, modules, maps you're looking to pick up? If so, let me know. Send me some feedback at feedback@thehangarbaypod.com. Always love to hear what listeners are flying and what new additions they picked up for the game. Continuing on the DCS front, as I mentioned in the flyby, Polychop just announced that the OH-58D Kiowa is now undergoing testing by Eagle Dynamics and their external test team. So I think it's safe to say that the release date for this is coming much sooner rather than later. We still don't have any official announcements outside of some additional development screenshots that they included in the weekly DCS newsletter, but possible we see this before the summer? It's kind of interesting to me at this point. I'm really curious if we see the F4E from Heatblur release or if Polychop sneaks it across the finish line first. Either way, I think both aircraft are looking really, really good, and I can't wait to get my hands on them, but we'll have to wait and see until they release officially for the game. All right, moving away from the modern side of the flight sim community, let's go back in time, start focusing on IL-2 in the Great Battle series with some World War II updates. So they just released dev blog number 357 on Thursday, February 8th. The blog focused on a lot of follow-ups to their previous development diaries, but got into a little bit more detail about some things that are coming our way. They did mention that they're continuing to beta test the upcoming patch. So all those new career change we discussed in previous weeks and the control assignment feature that's being added, they say are working great, coming along really smoothly. But the big piece of news this week was the Spitfire IXC that we talked about coming alongside the IAR-80B. The Spitfire IXC will be automatically available to all Battle of Normandy owners. So no having to purchase this as a unique aircraft. It's coming for free in the 5.202 update, which means both the Battle of Normandy and Bodenplay will now have their own Spitfire IX to fly, as a Bodenplay already featured the Spitfire IXE. On the mission editor front, there was some interesting news in the dev diary that said they will have an option for on-the-fly editing of landscape, forest, and water maps that could previously only be done using third-party graphics editing software. So they detailed some nice screenshots of what this actually looks like in practice. And if you're interested, if you're the modding type, you can actually go into the maps now and plant a forest, cut down trees, fill in a river, remove a lake, create a mountain, whatever you want to do to your heart's content. Looks like a really interesting capability for those who are interested in editing the game. Now, following up on that, I dug into the forums a little bit to understand a little bit how that would work in practice. You know, can you edit a map and then host that map on a multiplayer server and then everyone automatically downloads that? Well, it doesn't sound like it's going to be that easy. So you can edit the maps, especially if you're looking just to do this for single player purposes. There's no problem there. Making these edits will store the new version of the map as a copy in the map folder of the game. So in the game, you'll have the ability to enable mods. Do you want to use your modded map or do you want to use the default map? But the distribution of that's a little bit more complex. It won't automatically allow a server to host this map and then require any user connecting to it to download and, you know, just patch it in for you, because some of these changes could be several hundred megabytes in size. So it sounds like a very cool feature from a functionality standpoint, but how it would actually be implemented by the community in a multiplayer setting could be a little bit more complicated. Most likely you'd be required to go download the map on your own, make sure it's installed, and then the server is going to have to enable modding. And I'm not familiar enough to know if they can actually just turn on a specific mod such as the map itself while disabling other maps. So we'll have to see how that actually comes to light in the functionality process when this goes live. But either way, it does allow you to edit some things on your own. And anytime we can simplify the editing process or the mod process for some of these flight sims, I think it's a win. So overall, some great news coming out of the IL-2 dev team this week. Sticking around on the World War II front, we have an update from Jason Williams and Skystreak Productions on Combat Pilot. So Combat Pilot, if you're not familiar, is going to be a combat flight simulation focused on the World War II Pacific Theater. Jason Williams, being a former executive producer of IL-2, founded his own company, and this is their sixth dev diary now. It's the first one for 2024, so the first one we've covered on this show. The biggest update that stood out to me is they're still planning to participate in the Flight Sim Expo this June, scheduled in Las Vegas. You know, we've touched on that on previous episodes of this show. Hope to have an update for you on their status on next week's show. I know the team in over at the Flight Sim Association is still committed to having the show in Vegas on time in June, and it sounds like they're going to have an announcement about where the new location will be for that show. That said, from a combat pilot perspective, as I mentioned, they're planning to participate in the show this year, and they plan to show what we have flying at that point and have attendees take the stick. So for those of you who are planning to go to the show, should be a great option for you to check out what Jason and company have in store and be the first ones to lay your hands on what this flight sim's coming together and looking like. Other elements of the Dev Diary this week include a lot of art updates, so lots of pictures of assets the game's going to utilize, including the A6 M2 Zeke, the F4 F Wildcat, a variety of ship anti-aircraft and deck guns, as well as what I thought was the most intriguing element, which was hangar day pictures of the USS Enterprise and Imperial Japanese Navy Akagi aircraft carrier. The quote from Jason I thought was really interesting was to say, to be honest, we don't know exactly how much of this detail we'll use yet or how we will integrate it into gameplay, but it's nice to have it available. Of course, we have lots of ideas, but there's much more to do before we tackle this issue, which makes sense. But it is really great to see that there could be a possible gameplay mechanism to taking advantage of the hangars, maybe bringing aircraft up, down, potentially doing something along the lines of what DCS is looking to do with the addition of the ready room feature, which seems like we've been waiting for forever. But so who knows what Jason and company will have in progress. They did touch on a few other development notes as well, specifically mentioning how great the community's been about providing feedback of what elements they'd like to see in the game. And Jason mentions that, you know, nothing in the flight sim genre is ever easy. And they just be transparent with the community. The limiting factor for them is always going to be budget and manpower, not their imagination, creativity, or desire to please the community. The biggest focus right now of Jason and the team is they don't want to bite off more than they can chew. It sounds like they really want to avoid mission creep and deliver a solid product to begin with, and then work toward that first technical milestone, and then share more about what follow-on additions they can make at that point in time. So they did say they'd like to announce more about what that first technical milestone will be in the coming weeks. So stay tuned. Hopefully we'll have some new updates about Combat Pilot in the weeks ahead. So that wraps things up for developer news. Let's shift over to the hardware side of the community.
Flight controls.
So starting this week off with Honeycomb. I feel like we've talked a lot about Honeycomb, probably more than some of you would care to choose or care to listen to, since it's not necessarily military flight sim focused, but it's hardware, it's flight sim related, so we're going to talk about it. Former manager Nikki Repenning appears to be out just weeks after taking to Facebook to update the status of the company. We got a new management update on the flyhoneycomb.com website. Per their update, it sounds like they transitioned and Nikki is no longer with the company. The direct quote is, "In January, we transitioned to new management of the Honeycomb brand. And with this significant management change, we plan on injecting a fresh perspective and expertise into Honeycomb Aeronautical." Now, there's no indication of who these new owners might be. Is this potentially the business partner that Nikki had previously mentioned he no longer had a professional relationship with? Has someone new bought out the company? No idea on that. The only tease we have is our current management team has decades of experience in manufacturing, developing, and supporting high-quality hardware at a global level. They do go on to mention on the blog post that if you need any customer support, you should contact the Honeycomb company at support@flyhoneycomb.com via email. And they say their production team remains committed to productions in Hong Kong, to include the Charlie rudder pedals. They say all pre-orders placed through the website will be shipped on, all orders placed through the Honeycomb website and their official partners, don't want to exclude anyone who ordered from a third party, will be shipped on June 24th, 2024. If you'd like to cancel your orders, you should be able to receive a refund in February. And then any orders that are canceled will be made available for sale when the new orders ship on the 24th of June. So, interesting development there. You know, despite all the turnover in leadership, Honeycomb appears to be committed to getting this product out the door. It seems like we've been seeing a lot of rudder pedals in recent times, between the changes in the damper that Verpal's offering to the new pedals upgraded by Winwing to now these from Honeycomb. So if you were previously missing rudder pedals from your flight sim setup, you've got no excuse, I guess, to get in on that action now if you got some money lying around. And then finally on the Honeycomb front, not to go too far down this rabbit hole, but Nick Repenning did a 5-hour interview with the Flight Sim website Threshold. So I linked to this in the blog notes. This attempts to get at a little bit more what's gone on behind the details. And the team over there at Threshold asked some questions to learn more exactly about the situation and his side of the story. This did come out before the Honeycomb blog news, so the team over at Threshold did not have this development on hand before they interviewed Nikki. That said, it's an interesting deep dive into what's gone on, so if you're interested in learning more about the conversation, getting Nikki's full side of the story, I encourage you to check it out. I've got it linked on the show notes. But the final note, the quote that I want to take away from the Threshold article is one that I agree with. Of, you know, and this applies to any hardware or software developer in this community, is that if this means the end of Honeycomb, then we've lost a huge disruptor in the lower to medium price peripheral market. And in the end, we all lose on that front. Couldn't agree more. Great comment, Threshold. Hopefully this is not the end of Honeycomb. You always like to see more options in this community. More options create more creativity, drives more competition, and in the end, we as consumers all win. So, speaking of new competitors on the market, shift things over to Flycon Tech. So, I have not tried anything with this hardware company. They're relatively new on the scene. Flycon Tech recently released their heavily Verpal inspired, you could say, Evo Mark I space bundle. So that is a grip, left and right joystick and base that is heavily inspired by Verpal's Constellation Alpha lineup. So I know they've got a lot of flack for supposedly stealing that design, yet some of the initial reviews have come on the market and seem to rate it favorably. So if you're interested, check that out. That's Flycon Tech. That's the Evo Mark I Flight Sim bundle. But their newest piece of news is they debuted a new throttle render. So they're announcing quickly on the follow-up of their joystick and joystick base, an addition to their lineup that includes a new throttle. So it's an interesting looking design. I encourage you to check it out if you have a chance. Check out the show notes. That said, they're claiming that this new throttle will be highly ergonomic, with throttle control grips that are placed at your hand so you don't have to remove it while playing. Specifically, what they're referring to is that they don't have one, but two axes near the thumb with rotational hat switches. And they also tease a variety of toggle switches and buttons, everything that a professional needs, so they claim. They haven't released any new development news, so we just have the mock-ups available to us. Just encourage you to go check it out because it's a little bit of a wonky design, but hey, I always like someone who's looking to bring something new to the market. We'll have to wait and see how it performs from a functional standpoint and once we see some actual hardware pictures rather than just mock-ups. But new entrants to the throttle scene, always exciting to see. Now to one of the more established players in the market, Verpal. They announced that in celebration of Valentine's Day, a 10% off sale. So if you're in the market for a HODAS upgrade or looking to add some new panels to your Flight Sim setup, Verpal's got you covered. The requirement here to get the 10% off is you got to purchase 2 Verpal control devices, and you have until the 16th of February to make your purchase. I've been looking to upgrade my Verpal F14 grip, so maybe I'll add in another piece of hardware. Make a purchase while the sale's on, but we'll have to wait and see. On more personal news, my Verpal AH64 Collective Grip arrives today. Extremely excited about that. So hopefully I'll have a review for possibly next week's show or maybe a separate video on the YouTube page at Stumanji for you guys if you're interested in checking out my thoughts on the Verpal AH64 Collective. All right, so that concludes things on the hardware front. Let's shift over to the community side of the house. So Joystick Diagrams updates their plans for 2024. If you haven't heard of them, their website is joystick-diagrams.com. They're also available on GitHub at Joystick Diagrams. It's a great piece of software. I've utilized it for a couple years now. Essentially, what Joystick Diagrams attempts to do is to automate the process of creating binding sheets for your HOTAS setup. So your joystick, throttle, button boxes, whatever the case may be. If you're like me, you jump between games sometime, you jump between aircraft, you can't remember what you have the buttons on or your hat switches on a throttle or your joystick bound to for a specific aircraft or game, this makes that process tremendously easy for you. Essentially, what it does is it automatically connects the software to your game of choice and then exports that your bindings, and it puts it into a PDF picture format for you. So boom, no longer do you have to wonder, okay, I'm flying the F-16 now. You know, what's my thumb hat do on my throttle? What's my thumb hat do on my verbal thumb hat, right? It's already there for you in a PDF format, and then you can either put that in an e-board or print it off and take it with you when you go flying. So great piece of software. Highly recommend checking it out if you're interested. That said, their 2024 update teases a lot of the new functionality coming to this software. Specifically, they mentioned that they're going to refine the new user interface. It's going to have some new plugins in place that'll make it easier to support additional games. Currently, Joystick Diagrams is focused on DCS World, Star Citizen, and has support for Joystick Gremlin, but their next game up is going to be BMS. So for you Falcon 4.0 lovers, Joystick Diagram is coming your way soon. The new UI will also add modifier support, which has been something they've been lacking. Right now, the support's generally focused on just what specific hats are doing or what specific buttons are doing. But if you use the modifier, it wouldn't really be able to help you out. That'll be added in the new UI, so that'll have you covered. And then finally, the release date is still TBD. They mentioned that the initial 2.0 alpha is on the immediate horizon. So if you're interested in this software, they said one thing that'll help it come out to you sooner is testers. So if you'd like to participate and test the pre-alpha builds or help with building templates, right now their templates cover out-of-the-box companies like Thrustmaster, Logitech, Verpal, and VKB, and Winwing. But if you're interested in adding any others, please contribute to the community. I've got the link to the Discord on the show notes, as well as to the website and the GitHub page. So that's Joystick Diagrams. Give it a shot. Might be just what you're looking for to get yourself organized. On the DCS front, we've got a new mod for everyone, which is the USS Bonhomme Richard. So CV-31 comes to DCS. This actually has been out for a little while. I just hadn't seen it come across my radar. But thanks to Sidekick and his wonderful YouTube page, that's Ian Christie. If you haven't checked him out, it's at Sidekick65. He's also got a great Discord server, which is linked on the show notes. You know, his channel is dedicated to iron bombing. He's probably got the best about me section. I love it. It's the iron bombing channel. We drop bombs here the old-fashioned way by aiming the aircraft at the target. Enjoy tutorials, missions, and short documentaries. Let's go move some mud. Agreed, Ian. Sidekick has some great content. I'll look at to feature some more of that in the weeks ahead. He's a great follow on YouTube. His Discord server is a great community. Packed full of valuable information if you like to move mud and do the air-to-ground mission in DCS. But getting back to the specifics of this week's update, as I mentioned, the USS Bonhomme Richard comes to us from a TETET modding team. Yep, that's right, TETET. They have the Vietnam War Vessels mod pack. And 2 weeks ago, they updated the Bonhomme Richard mod pack to also include the F-8 Crusader. So if you're someone who's been looking to recreate your time on Yankee Station off the coast of Vietnam, this mod pack's got you covered. It also includes the USS Maddox, DD-731, a Sumner-class destroyer. So if you're looking to fully recreate that scene to go along with the Forrestal class carrier that's already in the game, the Essex class could be just what you're looking for. Now, the F-8 is mainly intended as a static object. It can be used for some limited AI operations and potentially for user flying, but it's, you know, that's kind of a use at your own risk type of scenario. But if you just kind of want to flesh out some assets on the carrier when you come into land, this could be a pack you're looking for. Sidekick has a great video that showcases exactly what this content looks like in game on his YouTube page. It's linked in the show notes for you. Give it a follow, give him a like and subscribe, support what he's doing over there, and enjoy some new assets in DCS. All right, on that front, very similar to that, let's go over to the user content of the week.
They just blew themselves up.
So user content is where we sometimes focus on a mission, sometimes we focus on a tutorial, sometimes it's just an interesting topic of conversation, and this week we got a couple of those things for you. Starting things off, if you want to prepare yourself for the F4 release in DCS, Charon over at Flying Wire has a wonderful kneeboard pack for you. So it's only 7 pages currently, but he's hoping to flesh that out as the aircraft is released and starts to enter early access. But kicking things off, he's got you covered with a couple charts focused on antenna elevation settings for the air-to-air radar and how to know what altitude your target's at. Also, some settings and scan pattern pictures for the APQ-120 radar that'll be featured in the F4E. And then finally, he's got some employment checklists for the AIM 7 and AIM 9. So great content before the module is even released. Download it today. Get yourself prepared before, so when the aircraft launches, you're ready to go. That's flyandwire.com. Links in the show notes, as well as a direct link to the kneeboard pack. Now, I just downloaded this kneeboard pack a few days ago. Also important to point out, it's got additional content beyond the F4E in there. He also has content for the F-14A, F-14B, and the KA-50. And I haven't talked about him before, but Karen over at the flyandwire.com website is an incredible source for all things F-14 Rio. If you have ever wanted to master the art of the radar in the F-14, be a backseater, even learn about the F-4E WISO and F-15E WISO stations, he is your go-to source. He has an 892-page book on being a Rio in the F-14, and it's available to the community. Go check it out. Support what he's doing over there. It's really incredible. Now, shifting over to things to the topic of conversation side, as I mentioned, this is not always just an add-on or download. Sometimes it's about an interesting topic that someone in the community brought up. One of the users over on the Hog at Reddit asked an interesting question about any tips for those who dip in and out of the DCS community, or I should say dipping in and out of flying DCS and return after a month-long layoff. You know, I'm one who definitely does this. I'll be really hot and cold. I'll fly a lot, and then boom, another game grabs my attention. I go check that out for a while. I come back, and I'm like, where the heck did I leave off? How do I fly any of these aircraft? So it was an interesting discussion, as I'm someone who suffers from that. So some interesting points to take away, I thought, to share with you folks about what are some recommendations to make your jumping back into DCS a little smoother and easier. And some of the consensus comments seem to be focused on, you know, don't try to hold yourself to the standard of mastering an aircraft when you come back. Just try to be 80% effective. That'll prevent you from getting discouraged, bouncing off the game when you come back in, and being down on yourself and being too frustrated. You know, focus on some simple things, getting familiar again with the aircraft, do one or two things effectively, and that'll ease that transition back in to the aircraft, which I fully agree with. Now, more specifically, Pikey DCS, a user over on the forum or the Reddit page who responded, his emphasis was on making your most important workflows. In other words, identify what you like to do in the game. Do you like to bomb coordinate? Do you like to execute coordinated strikes with a JDAM? Do you want to kill a radar or a SAM site with a HARM? Do you want to kill an aircraft with an AMRAAM? You know, figure out what you like to do. Make checklists focused specifically on that. And when I say checklists, I mean the exact switchology. What buttons do I need to press to do those tasks? And nothing more, like 1, 2, 3. Then go create a training mission, you know, with unlimited fuel, weapons, invulnerable, that puts you next to a target. And if you don't want to create one, just go download one. You know, we mentioned a lot of sandbox missions on last week's show, so go check some of those out or give the DCS user files section a search. But the idea there being, you know, put yourself in a position where you can't be punished for not remembering necessarily all the ins and outs of the aircraft. But what you can do is turn on active pause or engage in a scenario where you can practice those steps that you just wrote down for yourself. Do those over and over again. Identify any holes you've got in your process. You know, add those into your checklist. Now, this won't be perfect. You know, things are going to come up, especially if you play multiplayer that you weren't expecting, but you at least have a nice framework. You're not going to be perfect, but you're going to be functional. And that's going to really prevent you from that feeling of defeat and then it causes you to bounce off again. So I thought it was a great tip. Shout out to you, Pikey. Great comment. And I fully agree that for me, whenever I get back into the game after a long break, it's all about just get flying. Don't get frustrated. I like to start with simple things. I like to put dumb bombs on targets, rockets on targets, work with sidewinders. You know, if you can do that, you can be dangerous enough to be effective. Well, maybe I'm not great at aiming, so mildly effective, at least scare some people more than hit them. But you know what I'm saying? Have a good time. Get up there with your friends if you fly multiplayer, or just feel confident if you're in the single player environment. The other tip I like to keep in mind for myself, at least, is I like to associate certain jets with certain missions. So some of the aircraft, you know, especially more modern aircraft, excel in that multi-role environment. They can do it all. Well, that's also overwhelming when you come back into the cockpit, right? So I like to say, okay, in the F-18, I can be really good executing laser-guided bomb drop and air-to-air. And then in the F-15, maybe I only want to execute dumb bomb drops. I don't know, whatever the case may be. Or I only fly the Viggen when I want to do an anti-ship mission. That helps me contextualize what I want to do with a specific aircraft, but also prevents me from feeling like I need to learn every element of the aircraft. And so if I ever want to just switch between aircraft in mission, when I come back in, I feel much more confident because I only have to carve off a small piece of that pie. So those are some of my tips. Those are some of the community's tips in this discussion. What do you think? What are your recommendations for when you've been away from the game for a while, you want to get started again, but you don't want to feel overwhelmed? Let me know. feedback@thehangarbaypod.com or hit me up on Twitter or Instagram @thehangarbaypod. All right, so that concludes things for the user content portion of the week. Let's kick it over to my personal favorite segment of the show, the Sim Pit Spotlight.
You don't see any big stream of flames or smoke coming out, do you?
The Sim Pit Spotlight's where we highlight a community member's personal Sim Pit setup, no matter how simple or complex, to celebrate the joy of flying from home. And this week, we're going to kick it back to someone we already talked about in this show, and that's Caron over at flyandwire.com. So he, as I mentioned, is the resident expert on the Rio or Wizzo seats of the aircraft. And at part and parcel of that, he has an incredible F-14 Rio Sim Pit setup. It's unlike anything else I've really ever seen in the community. And I highly encourage you to go check it out at flyandwire.com. In addition to all his tutorials about how to operate the Rio or Wizzo seat, he's got an incredible amount of documentation and tutorials about how to design panels, how to wire those panels, how to code them up with an Arduino. And it really results in an incredible Rio setup where he's got every element that he needs to control the various radars and switchology back there. And his most recent update from 2023 shows how he expanded that functionality to include some MPDs or MFDs for the F-15E Strike Eagle. So it's a great source of inspiration and knowledge if you're an aspiring sim pit builder or you're a veteran just looking for something a bit different. I'm sure he's got some amazing plans in store for the F4E. He's been incredibly useful to me as I've been looking how to make additions to my flight sim setup. Check it out, flyandwire.com. Again, that's Caron, K-A-R-O-N. So let's get things over to the listener feedback portion of the show.
612, departure radio check.
If you have any ideas for news, content, folks you'd like me to feature in the Sim Pit Spotlight portion of the show, please feel free to contact the show via email, feedback@thehangarbaypod.com. You can also leave a voice message for the show on a Spotify page or contact me on social media, anywhere you can find the show, Instagram or Twitter @thehangarbaypod, on the Facebook page, The Hangar Bay, or on YouTube @stewmanji, that's S-T-E-W-M-A-N-J-I. You can feel free to like or subscribe or comment. I read every comment and I'll reply to you there. I'd love to hear what you think the show could do better and what content you'd like to feature on the show, and we'll get it for you next week. That said, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Hangar Bay. We'll be back next Saturday to get you squared away with all the latest military flight simulation and hardware news. But until then, think about what you put out into the community and make it a better place. Fly safe, everyone.
Let's go down low out of decks. Unload 500 knots. Let's get out of here.
The missile knows where it is at all times. Oh, I'm sorry. What I meant to say is that you can find the video show on YouTube or on Spotify at the Hangar Bay Pod. The audio show is available on all major podcast providers. You can contact the show via email, feedback@thehangarbaypod.com, or on Instagram and Twitter @thehangarbaypod. Show notes and links to everything discussed on this week's show are available at thehangarbaypod.com.